track at the wall. We are tied.
Look at this. He's found his ball. I don't believe it. I don't believe it.
Oh, dropping a big leg. Over for the cover.
It's over. Unbelievable.
High fly ball.
He got it! The stunner! Mike Tyson in! Austin is the champion! Stone Cold! Stone Cold! Stone Cold!
Now the 2-2. Well hit, Dominic for a line. Way back in!
Touch a ball, Joe! You'll never hit a bigger home run in your life!
NerdCell Connection Podcast Network listeners, this is JT, and welcome to WWE War, Wrestling Above Replacement, a sabermetric plus-minus style look at WWF, WWE pay-per-view history. Joining me, as always, is my partner on the show, Marcus. Marcus, how are you?
I'm doing great, and how apropos with MLB Hot Stove as hot as ever this week. I'm happy to be here breaking down 2011-2012 WWE baseball sabermetric style with you.
It's always a lot of fun, Marcus. This is our fifth episode. For those that are new, we are breaking down each WWF, WWE pay-per-view season, which means we start with the show post-WrestleMania up until the next year's WrestleMania. And we are ranking each pay-per-view, we're ranking each season, and we're doing that by giving each show a total plus-minus netted out war based on ranking it with a number of categories. So each pay-per-view will be ranked by build, commentary, atmosphere, notable moments and importance, match grades, card structure, rewatchability, and all-time matches. There'll be pluses, there'll be minuses, however that nets out. We then add up the total for each category, and that'll give you a final score. We'll use that final score to rank all the pay-per-views and eventually all the years as well. We previously wrapped up the 94-95 season. We started there. And then last episode, we kicked off the 11-12 season as well. Marcus, anything you want to add before we get rolling?
I don't think so. I think you summed up everything really well.
Okay, so here's our rankings as of now. The worst show we've talked about was Over the Limit 2011 at a -9 war. So pretty bad. Mm. Really set the basement, I think, for us. Set the floor. We then have WrestleMania 11 at -0.75, so just above that break even. Rumble 95 at 5.5. King of the Ring 94 at 6.5. Survivor Series 94 at 7.75, Extreme Rules 11 at 8.75, and our best show to date is SummerSlam 1994 at a total score of 9. And Marcus, something tells me that ceiling is going to be adjusted here tonight.
I think so, and maybe, well, not so much the floor, but definitely the ceiling. We've got some quality steaks on the grill tonight. I'm looking forward to getting into it.
All right, so why don't we fire things up then with Capital Punishment 2011. And this is an interesting show. I remember the build pretty well and like the hype. It's always cool when they kind of just create like a one-off name because of location.
Yeah.
Like it feels like an old school Clash of Champions or something. So this did occur on June 19th, 2011 from the Verizon Center in Washington, D.C. And Marcus, why don't you take us through the card?
Absolutely. Opening up the pay-per-view for the United States title, we had Kofi Kingston defending against Dolph Ziggler.
Oh, hang on. We always forget the dark match. Santino Marella and Vladimir Kozlov defeated Heath Slater and Justin Gabriel.
Excuse me, with all due respect. How dare I? Cannot. But yeah, opening the show proper, we had for the United States title, Kofi Kingston defending against Dolph Ziggler. We crowned a new champion. Dolph Ziggler retains. I went 3.25.
Yeah, I went 3 stars on this match. I thought it was pretty solid. Always good to have a title change. Gave it a hot opener. I thought the crowd was, you know, I'm not going to say they were super hot, but I thought that they were pretty into it. And again, Dolph, I think as we'll see, we've already seen like glimpses of it, is going to become a real workhorse during this stretch. So I thought this is a fine way to open the show and a really rock solid opener for the U.S. title.
Yeah, 2 solid acts to open the show, but you mentioned Dolph, and I'm really interested in kind of tracking his progress throughout the year, because we know there is this period in time where, over the next few seasons, where he's going to be a bit of a bigger player and one of the better workers that they have, but I'm curious to kind of track that, and it feels like it really starts here.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
In the next match, we've got the implosion of the Mega Powers as Miz faces Alex Riley. And Alex Riley is going to win that matchup and say it to the Miz's face. I went 2.75.
Tim Capel's favorite actor winning a surprising match. And, you know, I know we have things coming in store for the Miz, but like, this really felt questionable to me. Miz is just world champion, coming off a 3 pay-per-view series with John Cena. Yes, we know it was one of the all-time worst main events a pay-per-view ago. But to go from main eventing like a half-hour I Quit match and losing the world title shot to John Cena to then losing to Alex Riley like weeks later, it felt a bit much to have him tail-spinning like this already. And I know maybe they had thoughts and plans for Riley, but I think this is it. Like, this is his peak as winning this match. It's like he then goes on and wins a title or gets a big push. Like, do we even see him on pay-per-view again in a substantial role? Like, I don't think so.
No, not for a while. I think he's going to be involved in a multi-man match, in a couple shows from now, but, yeah, this felt like the start of something bigger, but we know that it's not. And it seems very early to be sprinkling the Miz dust, on Alex Riley. Like maybe this match happened too soon. You know, maybe they just should have had a brawler segment.
Or if you're going to have a match, like, maybe Riley gives him a go. Looks like he's going to have him beat. But Miz, like, outsmarts him and steals the win. And it's kind of like, all right, you're good, but you still have to learn a lot before you can outsmart, like, the heel master. You know what I mean? Like, maybe Miz puts the, you know, it's just stupid, put the feet on the rope or hits him with a foreign object and pins him. Just something, give like, a little cheap win or something. Or maybe even Miz runs away. Like, he's just frustrated or gets DQ'd on purpose. It's something like that.
Yeah.
You want Riley to get the win, but for Riley just to beat him felt like a real precipitous drop.
Yeah. A finish to kind of like further things along and escalate things as opposed to like just kind of finish telling this story, you know, open and shut, I think would have played out better for everybody involved. But our next matchup, we've got The Big Show versus...
Real quick on that one, I don't know if we gave the grade. I went 2.25 on that.
Oh, okay, 2.25, and I went 2.75. I liked it a tad bit more.
Mm, big A Rye guy.
I'm, yeah, yeah.
Look at me! I'm really mad!
Anyway, here's my theory. My theory on Alex Riley. If WWE was going to like put a creative wrestler into like this oven, right? You would have Alex Riley as like the finished product, I feel like. And so I was like, okay, this guy looks like WWE champion. And you know, we're not going to get that this year.
He looks like a generic like Ken doll. Like, or if you were like, you go to the supermarket and they always have those like knockoff wrestling figures. That's what it feels like. Just like the knockoff junky fake pro wrestling figure.
You should have kept the varsity jacket.
Mm.
That's where the money was at.
I'm real man.
Speaking of money, we've got
I live alone.
Alberto Del Rio defeats the Big Show by, I guess, knockout, referee stoppage.
Yeah.
I went 2.75.
You were much higher than me on this one, under 5 minutes. I went 1.75 stars. I was not super into this match. I am a fan of Alberto Del Rio. I do think this is a very good year for him. Big Show works at times, but kind of is what it is. I mean, you know, before the match, Mark Henry attacked Show and put him through the table. So Show basically was already withered from that. So this felt like more like a segment than a match to me, but it wasn't like super interesting either as a segment.
Yeah, I'm not sure why I liked it so much. I do think Big Show did a pretty good job selling, but even at like clocking in under 5 minutes, considering the beatdown that Big Show got before the match, and this is like the infamous double clutch World Strongest Slam through the table, I feel like it went a little bit long. But I think I just really liked the selling. I thought Big Show did a good job, and thought Del Rio did really good with the strikes in this match.
Yeah, it was fine.
Well, we see eye to eye on this matchup. As for the Intercontinental title, Big Zeke Ezekiel Jackson is going to defeat Wade Barrett by submission with the torture rack. And yes, I went 2 stars.
Yeah, I went 2 as well. I mean, it was fine. Again, the crowd was pretty checked out on this. This whole core Nexus split with all these issues, like, the crowd really hasn't been into any of it. I think it's been one of the constants for us so far. And I like Big Zeke. Again, I think if you're putting wrestlers into the Easy Bake Oven WWE, you know, training facility, like, Big Zeke comes out along with A-Rai. But for whatever reason, again, just didn't fully click at times. And, you know, Barrett, he's still less than a year in here and feels like, again, a guy that they'd really get behind, but just hasn't put it together. And these two guys, this was a golden opportunity for them to say, all right, we're giving you a pay-per-view match. There's a tunnel on the line. Yeah, it's not super long. It's under 7 minutes. But, like, go out there, two big dudes, and throw some bombs for 7 minutes. Like, give us a good hot-paced match. And instead, we just kind of get a little bit meandering. So, again, it wasn't bad, but it was almost it seemed like a wasted opportunity for them.
Yeah, it doesn't play to anybody's strengths in the match. And, you know, Barrett's capable of getting, you know, 2 stars out of a broomstick for the most part. Not to say Big Zeke is a broomstick, but at this point, like, he's very naked. He's very bland and kind of, you know, boring. I hate to say it. Like, I love Big Zeke, but he needs a package around him. He needed the Brian Kendrick or, you know, something else. And, you know, even the core would have been, you know, a little bit better if had they, you know, maybe had somebody split off with him or something. But yeah, this isn't it. And this is the second instance we're seeing of like taking a younger, hotter heel and trying to get over a new kind of bland face, baby face.
And I think it's just one of the problems with this, you know, it's an ongoing problem for them, right? It's a known thing where they have all these pay-per-views and have to have all these rematches and matches and full time and everything else. And it feels like they never give momentum to some of these guys because they constantly have to have matches. You know, it's like, all right, we have to have another US title match or another IC title match on pay-per-view because we get another pay-per-view in 3 weeks. So you never get real momentum built. So like Barrett feels like he's just getting a push and it's already taken away from him because, well, we got to do something on this show, right?
Yeah, and it feels like Barrett has kind of been like Intercontinental Champion for 10 months, and it's not the case, and not a hot 10 months either.
Right.
Next match, we've got CM Punk defeating Rey Mysterio. I went 3.5.
Yeah, I like this match. So I went 3.25. I thought it was very good, well-worked, exciting pace. You know, these guys have really good chemistry. And honestly, I was just happy to see Punk do something better. Like with a last show, right? He was stuck with Mason Ryan against Kane and Big Show. And this is an interesting time for him because it was well known that his contract was coming due. So it felt like, okay, he's putting over Rey Mysterio and, you know, that's it. Like he's going to win the match, but then Punk ends up winning. So like you know, it felt like the contract stuff was out there. He's going to put over Ray. Punk wins, so it makes you wonder, like, okay, Is this setting up maybe a rematch on Raw where Ray beats him and he leaves? Or is he talking about staying? So it was an interesting time period coming in here, and a match with two guys that have very good chemistry.
Yeah, and on the other side of the coin, I was happy to see Mysterio be able to sink his teeth into something. We saw him kick off the season by wrapping up his storyline with Cody Rhodes on pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. And then last month, he puts over R-Truth, and like R-Truth really establishing his new character and you know, furthering that development. So I was happy to see something a little higher quality for Rey Mysterio, because I'd say so far he feels kind of wasted. And I even remember during this time kind of being a little bit down on Rey. So I thought this was a nice surprise and a good use of Rey.
Yep. No, me as well. And I think Rey has settled into a good spot here. Like, to your point, like, you can use him to put others over. He's bulletproof, but he's also still believable as a major threat and a player at any time. So he's good. He's kind of like in that Jericho realm that he'd often be in post, you know, whatever, 02, something like that, where a guy believable enough to win titles, but also losses aren't going to hurt him.
Yeah. And speaking of titles, we've got for the World Heavyweight Championship, Randy Orton defending the title against Christian. I went 4.25 on this matchup.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is awesome. I went 4.25 as well. We talked about their first showdown at Over the Limit, which really saved that show. I feel like this was a slight notch better. I went 4 last month, 4.25, as I think they continue to build on each match and build a story and build the chemistry. And we're not done yet. We still got a ways to go with this feud. And this is such a great use of Christian. You know, early on we talked about how they kind of screwed him around with the Del Rio stuff and the way he won with Edge over his shoulder. But this is just such a better spot for him to be in. He's such a just a natural, more of a heel. And seeing him so desperately trying to, you know, win back his world title that he finally got a taste of earlier this year, and having to do it against a guy like Orton in the series of matches, just really screams like a better fit for him.
Yeah, we didn't get to view the SmackDown match in our watching, but like, Christian gets out wrestled and kind of like sabotaged there by Teddy Long. And then he gets the rematch Over the Limit. And again, like, he gets out wrestled by Orton. And here we've got, he kind of got out wrestled, but he has a case because his foot's underneath the rope for the finish of the match.
Yeah.
And he's going to run with that for a couple weeks. So I have it the same as the previous month. But it's like, I don't know, take your pick. Like, I felt while this match advanced the storyline, I'd say for me it was like on quality with the previous month's outing.
And it is considered an all-time match for us. So for all-time best or worst, if we both are at 4.25 or higher, it gets a point for being an all-time best. If it's at 0.75 lower for both of us, it's an all-time worst. It gets a negative point. So this is a bonus to the show here. They get a bonus point based on how good this match is.
And we've got another all-time match. Just kidding. We've got Evan Bourne versus Jack Swagger. I went 3 stars.
Yeah, I mean, this is a fun match. I went 2.75. Bourne is really good in this spot. Being able to just go out there, fill some time, and hang in, and then steal the win, which I think works well for him. And Swagger's good, too, because for a match like that, because he has pretty good big man offense, but he also stooges well. So, like, seeing him just kind of make that last mistake, it just fit, the roles fit both guys well. So, you know, Swagger goes to the ankle lock, Bourne counters it and pins him with an inside cradle. That's like the perfect finish for these two guys. So, yeah, this was a nice little palate cleanser before the main event.
Yeah, this was a nice little bonus match. Just like really solid match. Just really good storytelling, good dynamic, something different on the card. And that leads us into our main event for the WWE Championship. We've got John Cena successfully defending the title against R-Truth. I like this match a good bit. I went 3.25.
Yeah, I was a touch lower than you. I went 2.5 on it. I thought it was perfectly good. You know, I thought maybe Truth. It's not funny. I think he over and under delivered at the same time. Like, he over delivered because it's crazy he's even in the spot, given how he's been handled and used before this. So good on him. He's a believable challenge and a heel. But the match itself, to me, under delivered a bit, just because his heel turn was so good. The match against Rey was good with that win. And this just felt a little bit like, I think it was hindered because it was never really a question to me that Truth was going to win this title. You know what I mean? Like, it never felt like, oh, yeah, like, Cena's in trouble and Truth is going to be the world champion. It just felt unlikely. And then you get all stuff with the fan and the drink and everything else. I don't know. Just like, it felt like kind of a hokey finish. I guess it could be funny, but it felt like more like a Raw type of thing or something where he basically steals a hat and drink from a fan in the crowd. And then the fan throws a drink at Truth and Cena pins him after that. Like, I don't know. It felt forced and goofy. Like, this is R-Truth's big moment, big title shot that he's never had. He did this huge heel turn to get here and he's fucking with fans in the crowd. Like, it just, I don't know. It just felt like a little bit much. I didn't care for the finish.
Yeah, I thought this would have been a great opportunity to actually put the title on R-Truth. And there's enough great minds there that they should be able to come up with some kind of controversial finish to lead to John Cena getting a rematch the next night. Like, I thought this would have been a perfect example or a perfect time to do like a 24-hour title reign.
Right.
And then have R-Truth go on, because we're going to see the rest of the season. He's going to go on talking about Little Jimmy and conspiracy theories and stuff like that. So I thought that really could have been fueled by a short world title reign or WWE title reign, excuse me. And I did like the finish, even though it was a bit cartoony and hokey and a bit simplistic. At least it did play into what we've, you know, seen on TV or seen the video package recap and seen like some of the interviews that R-Truth has done on pay-per-view. So that went a long way with me. And then also the crowd really reacts for like Cena winning. And it's one of those moments, like, it made me think of Hogan in 91, like, winning the Royal Rumble, where, like, you hear, you know, maybe Hogan shouldn't have won the Royal Rumble, and, right. You know, you and Aaron, excuse me, you and Aaron covered that on, Rumble Pod.
Now
I'm in the Royal Rumble. Yeah. Thank you. Wrestler brain striking me. But, yeah, you guys covered that pretty well. And, like, that was kind of, like, how I correlated that here. It was, like, I remember being like, oh, I wish Cena didn't win. But then looking back on it 10 years later, it's like, ooh, that crowd really did pop for that win. And that's not how I remembered it.
Yeah, I think this match was helped a bit, too, by that Bourne Swagger match. So that was good because I think coming off of Orton Christian directly into this probably would have been a worse scenario for them. And, you know, it was fine. It's this is what they should do more of. Like, I'll credit them for creating this pay-per-view, heating up Truth and putting him in the match, and Cena wins. Like, that's fine to do, right? It's perfectly fine. Have the world champion battle off another challenger and move on. So, yeah, I don't know if Truth needed to win, but that said, in your scenario, if he does, I don't think it hurts what's to come, because it's not like Cena's had a long reign. I mean, he just won the title back. So if you potato it one night, like, it's not going to make what's to come feel any less earned or special. And it also, I mean, one way you could have went about it, too, is you could have done a Dusty finish here where Truth cheats to win and they reverse it either the next night or right on the spot to help fuel his controversy stuff.
Yeah, if there's even like 1 minute of like that Andre the Giant minute of him being world champion, like if R-Truth can get that, like, I think that plays so well for the rest of his career.
Yeah, so maybe you have him win and then they overturn it right away and Cena pins him, or whatever, let him have the night and roll into Raw the next night and they overturn it, or they give, like you said, they give Cena the rematch and Truth gets screwed, and then that helps really set up more of his conspiracy gimmick that's to come. So all right, so that is a 2.5, 3.75, and we did mention too, so what we do is we take the average of each match grade. So for example, that is an average of 2.875. I round up, and then our baseline, you know, replacement level match grade is a 2.5. So what we do is whatever that is from a 2.5, a plus minus is how it nets out. So the war of that match is a 0.5, because average would be 2.5. The rounded up average is 3. You get a 0.5. So the total war of match quality for the show is 3.75 on the plus minus.
Does that feel right to you for Capital Punishment?
Yeah. I mean, I would think it's probably high, honestly, I would have think maybe coming in I would have put it more toward the average, like a 2.5 type stuff, but I mean, it is buoyed by Orton Christian, which is a great match, and also had some really above average stuff that was good, like Punk Mysterio, You know, you ranked the main event higher. Also, the opener was pretty good. And nothing really bad besides Big Show Del Rio. And even that, like, the average was 2.25. So I think this is, it's helped just carry by the fact that there was nothing really bad on the card.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, this, if anything, like, it might have over-delivered a little bit. Mm-hmm. But again, like, solid matchups up and down the card. And a really nice surprise here for the, what is this, June? May?
June, yeah. Sure, June 19th.
June pay-per-view. Okay. Ooh, June 19th. It's Kane Day.
No, May 19th is Kane
Day. Oh, it's May 19th. Excuse me. June 19th. That's Juneteenth. I should know that a little bit better. But yeah, good card.
It is, my friend. And yeah, for a no-name throwaway pay-per-view. Because I think on the surface, and I'm trying to think back to like how I felt in the moment, and it's all probably documented on the Place to Be podcast in its early year. But it probably felt like, oh, God, like Cena, R-Truth, like they're just mailing this in to get the money in the bank. You know, like I think it felt that way in the moment, but it ends up, I think, definitely over-delivering, as we'll talk about a little bit more here now. So let's get into our categories. So the pluses for the build. I thought the event itself gained some mainstream attention with the parody and the illustrations of Obama, the White House, and everything going on there. So a lot of attention around that. R-Truth's changed ways leading to the title match. So I think we give a plus to the build there. Basically, the big heel turn, the smoking a cigarette, immediately pays dividends for him. We had Christian's heel turn as the referee missed pinfall in the first match. And then Christian helped Orton retain on TV against Sheamus, and then he turned on him. So this whole continued story has been really well done and deep. So point for that. We also get a point for Alberto Del Rio running over Big Show, leading to Kane screaming show on TV. And the Miz, Alex Riley disintegration, as much as we kind of crapped on the match, you had Michael Cole involved and Miz makes a save and all that stuff. So fine there. They at least put the time and effort into building this to feel like something relevant when ARI defeats him. So a decent amount of pluses there on the build. You want to cover the minus?
Absolutely. So on the minus side, we've got a bit of a lazy build for the United States title match between Kofi and Dolph, especially given Vicky Guerrero's presence. You could have done a little bit more there to justify that match being on the card and build up to that. We got Punk and Mysterio reigniting their feud involving the new Nexus. Not exactly the strongest material. And Barrett and Jackson with the core really had no momentum going for them either, even though this is the second time we're seeing them on pay-per-view.
All right, so that nets out to a total of two, plus two for the build. So, again, solid, probably a little bit higher than you would think on that. All right, commentary, the pluses. I thought they did a good job with the title matches here. They really covered the story of R-Truth well as well, so that's another point there. And, you know, Cole did fine with the Miz Riley story. He wasn't overbearing in it as he can be, tend to be with Miz. He does a fine job there and played his role as part of that. And also, I thought they did a good job of putting over Del Rio's aggression with Big Show and kind of what he's doing. He's pissed that he's gotten screwed out of the title, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, and the only minus for the evening on commentary, they were pretty flat and robotic for the Aaron Continental title match.
Yes. Can't blame them. The crowd was too.
Yeah.
So again, that's a plus three, which I would say is shocking when you look at 2011 commentary that we've been maligning so far here with Cole doing the heel shtick. And then it's weird that he's kind of friendly with Jerry Lawler and you got Booker in the mix. Just like everything about it, it feels like it's been a detriment mostly. But on this night, for whatever reason, it was a positive.
Yeah, and I think having like different commentators like swapping it out has sometimes been hit or miss, and I think on this night, like, it played to their advantage.
Especially when you have a subpar cruise, like getting them in and out for less time helps.
Yeah.
All right, atmosphere. Well, we liked the Capitol theme set, which really emphasized the location, and also the crowd was lively for the majority of the show, so they were pretty into this outside of a couple spots.
Yeah, it was just really nice and refreshing to see them like utilize actually and acknowledge where they are. And I thought, I don't know, that was just really memorable. And we don't really have any minuses for the atmosphere. Like we said, like,
yeah,
the crowd didn't always hit, but it's not enough to really ding it. Like, I would just put, you know, the crowd for the Intercontinental title match. You know, I'd say they were just at replacement level. They didn't do anything to take away from the atmosphere for the evening.
No, they were good for the stuff they should be good for, right? That's what counts to me. All right, so that's another plus +3 for atmosphere. So we're getting some good positives here for this show. Notable moments and importance. So we had a U.S. title change, so gets a point for that. Mark Henry slamming Big Show's at the table is a very memorable moment. Looked cool. Pushing their feet along, so point for that. I mean, as much as, again, we criticized it, Alex Riley pinning The Miz is a big moment for him. It could have potentially springboarded him. So we gave a point for that. Christian's foot under the rope was a big moment. It'll keep this feud going, give Christian a reason to continue to challenge Orton. And then, again, it's a notable moment. I thought it hurt the match, but it did. It is memorable and affecting R-Truth losing, and that's the fan getting involved in the finish of the title match.
Yeah, and as far as minuses, we got two here. We had a flat Intercontinental title change, and the Obama impersonator in-ring segment went a little long. And
a little. I think it was longer than his combined presidency.
Yeah,
we needed a term limit on this segment.
no one was chanting 4 more years after this segment.
Yeah, it just felt like it could have been. And again, oh, so there's one more here too. Brie Bella not ready for pay per view title matches. Yeah,
that might be a typo. Is that for next month?
Oh yeah, maybe actually.
Yeah, I was going to not have a Divas title match on this evening.
All right, we should probably move that over. All right, so. So back to the Obama segment, that really, really dragged on. Like, yeah, I mean, he was a pretty good impersonator, but this could have just been something they kept in the back, or maybe they do like the luxury box, like they've done in the past, like at WrestleMania 10 and stuff, where he's just, you know, in Survivor Series 96, where the impersonator is just out there, doing their thing, and, you know, as an interview segment versus like in the ring, dragging things out. So yeah, I thought this was a bit too much and the crowd was not into it.
Yeah, it would have been much better, kind of like Survivor Series 95, where they do the segments like after the match, rather than devoting an actual in-ring segment. And we didn't need to see his progression from like arriving and then like making his way backstage in one segment and like getting to the ring in another segment. It was just too much.
Right. Agreed. Okay, so that's plus +2 for notable moments. So we had, is it 3 now? Hang on, 1, 2... No. Okay. 4 minus 2. All right. Match grades. We already said we had 3.75. Card structure. I we just went with one right main event given the storyline. I think you could find a world where you would argue that Orton Christian should have been last, but Truth deserved the spot. The awesome heel turn. Cena's still the king. It made sense for them to close the show.
Yeah. And as far as negatives or minuses for the evening, it was all singles matches, which kind of made things feel a little bit robotic.
Mm-hmm.
No tag matches or multi-person matches to break things up. And the fact that they put Bourne and Swagger in between to kind of treat it like a popcorn match and treat it as a cool down, like it did serve that purpose, but they went out there and had a really good match. And I thought, you know, maybe they deserved a little bit better than the presentation of just being a kind of a throwaway match.
Right. So that's our first negative. We go a -1 there. And just to go back and recircle back, so the math was wrong. So it should be a 3 for notable moments after we had that wrong one listed. So there was 5 positive, 2 negative. So it's going to bump the grade a little bit for us. Okay, rewatchability gave a point for Orton Christian. Obviously, intensely rewatchable. It's a great match.
And as far as minuses, again, all singles matches make things feel, you know, a little repetitive. And they all kind of told a similar like story and structure throughout the evening. There wasn't a big, you know, difference between match 1 and match 2, match 3, so on and so forth. And they were a bit heavy on the Obama segments throughout the evening.
All right, so another -1 there. Then we get a bonus point for all-time matches for Orton Christian due to both being 4.25. And that gives us a final total score of 13.75 for Capital Punishment 2011, which is pretty strong, Marcus. It actually, for right now, puts it as our number one show at 13.75, outpacing SummerSlam by, you know, almost 5 points.
Wow. It, you know, the math adds up. The science mm-hmm. works. But, you know, being that much higher than SummerSlam, I wouldn't have expected that. And a really nice rebound considering the last show that we got to watch over the limit 2011. You know, we really got to the basement, and so now we get to go back up to the ceiling with the show. So this was good.
Yeah, it was really good. It was surprising. I actually enjoyed it more than I expected, and it makes me think again, like, what is going to be our midpoint? Like, is this going to be a high score? Because this feels like a very good, rock solid show. You know what I mean? So it feels like this would probably be like right above our midpoint.
Yeah, this
like
feels
it's not
like
replacement
a...
level, but it's a good show.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know, maybe somebody batting 260 or something like that, you know, a bit higher than 250, you know, make you turn your head and go, all right, decent season. But yeah, I'm curious to find out as we get more shows where everything's going to stack up and line out.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see, like, will this be on the higher end, or will this be end up being right around, like you said, like, you know, maybe a 260, 265 hitter or something like that, where it's not replacement level, but it's not like one of the best shows out there. But yeah, for right now, it is the best. So is our
it
number
is.
One
and
show.
I think it proves that when you have 12, 13, 14 pay-per-views in a calendar mm-hmm. year, it really helps to actually theme a couple of those shows outside of, all right, this is WrestleMania and this is SummerSlam. Like, They took a show that would just kind of be lost in the archives, mm-hmm. And they gave a little bit of a theme to it, and they played into where the show is, and they tried a little bit more at the set. And, you know, even the Obama stuff, even though we didn't like it, like, at least it does stand out. Like, it is noticeable and notable. So that's what, like, kind of stuck out to me, was it just even felt a little bit like WCW-ish. Like, WCW was very good about kind of making sure each pay-per-view felt a little bit different than the month before. And that's not really in the wheelhouse of WWE, but they did something different here and it paid off.
Yeah. And I, you know, I've talked about this, I think it was in my most recent mailbag a couple weeks ago, which airs once a month on Saturdays, where like it would behoove WWE to do this more now too, like take chances on these shows, and they're not main shows. You have the network, you have Peacock to play with. Like, yeah, just throw out R-Truth as a challenger and throw it in there as a random show. Like, why not do more of that? This is a prime opportunity and experience to show that, hey, something like this could work and deliver something memorable. And again, it was just a fine show. And I think what we're seeing helps here as we go through this is not having bad shit on the show, right? Mm-hmm. And I think it plays right into what we're looking at, the plus minus stuff, where if you're just good or fine for most of the show with a couple of high points, you're going to do well. You know, SummerSlam 94 overcame that all-time bad match, but just because it was our number one show to this point doesn't mean it's going to finish high. Like, we just hadn't mm-hmm. done many, and it was kind of a weird year. So we may end up seeing SummerSlam 94 be more of like a middle tier show, which would make sense because it does have something really bad dragging it down. So I think that's going to help a lot of these shows just to not have that all-time bad match on there. And that's what helps Capital Punishment. Everything's fine other than the stuff that's really good.
Yeah, like, again, those cards with balance, mm-hmm. you know, might play into their favor. You know, it's okay to have even an all-time bad as long as you have all-time good or very good or very good matches. You know, SummerSlam 94 is a perfect example. Over the limit, not so much.
All right. So before we get to our second show here tonight, let's just quickly talk about North South Connection. If you're new to listen to this, thank you. Welcome. Be sure to subscribe on any podcatcher app and leave us a rating and a review. It really helps us build some momentum, as some may say, and get noticed and pick up additional listeners, which we'd appreciate. We have tons of great content coming at you almost every day. A lot of it is wrestling based and a lot of it is evergreen. It's content that deep dives into many nerd level discussions and topics like this. We have a lot of list based shows. We have some different interesting ideas really that you don't hear or see anywhere else. Like you mentioned, now entering the Rumble earlier, Aaron and I are going through every single Royal Rumble entrance and participant. And so it's breaking down every Rumble appearance by The Undertaker across three episodes, right? That's our most recent stuff. And we started with 1988. We're kind of working through the entire Rumble history and covering every performance. So that's a lot of fun. Aaron and I also have No Holds Barred, where we do a lot of rankings. Right now, one of the projects we do once a month is going through every WWF World Heavyweight title change So, you know, coming up soon, we'll be diving into the Ultimate Warriors title matches. We recently did Randy Savage, where he won against Teddy DiBiase and lost to Hulk Hogan. So we're chronologically going through every world title change and ranking them based on a similar kind of scoring system like we have here on this show. You know, you and Tim Taylor are here after every big pay-per-view event. Most recently did Survivor Series that drops within an hour or so of the show ending, telling us what you missed. What, you know, if you missed the show, you can tell you what you should check out, what you should check out, shouldn't check out, is it worth checking out, et cetera, et cetera. So there's tons of cool stuff like that. And we cover a lot of different eras as well, whether it's the Ruthless Aggression era of 02, whether it's the New Generation era of the, you know, mid-90s, whether it's the Monday Night Wars, whether it's ECW during its peak, TNA during its early days. Like, we just have so much different content. And then there's some pop culture stuff in there, too. We have a chronological tracking of 90210. We have a podcast that talks about movies featuring wrestlers, as well as some comics content every Sunday. Just a lot of cool stuff, Marcus. Anything you want to hit on?
Just that viewer's choice. We do go live, for better or for worse, with the live reactions right after the show. And I wish I would have had a time machine to tell me to just absolutely skip Survivor Series because, woof. But yeah, thanks to, and special shout out to my buddy Tim, my best friend. Appreciate him. He's the one doing all the editing and the uploading for all that. So any chance I get, he's the mad scientist behind it all. So thank you, buddy.
And of course, we do have preview shows as well for every big event. Ryan Gray delivers those. He'll have one for War Games NXT. War Games coming up, so be sure to check out for that. Usually on the middle of the week leading into a big WWE pay-per-view event, Ryan and a rotating panel of guests pop in to preview the show. So I know I missed some stuff on there, but there's tons of good content. Be sure to subscribe, as well as some of our other feeds here, the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, which features the Place to Be podcast. It's the one that started it all with me and Scott Criscolo over 10 years ago, plus Place to Be Nation Pop Experience and the Jenny Position. Jenny Smith does a wonderful job covering tons of cool pop culture content. If you're a horror movie fan, be sure to check it out for sure. She has Freak Out Drive-In, which is a live watch horror movie podcast, as well as, if you heard about Pluto, if you're a fan of Pluto TV, or even if you've never heard of it, again, it's another live watch podcast she does, plus tons of other content. Be sure to check that out. And Marcus, tell us where you can find Final Wrestling Place.
That's right. You can find Final Wrestling Place with myself and Tim, not the Tool Man Taylor, over on the soon to be named network. We break down the nouns professional wrestling, and we put them in either the good place or the bad place. And right now we are wrapping up our series on the Raw guest host era.
Okay. Check all that out, and we appreciate you checking this out. So, Marcus, why don't we move over to Money in the Bank 2011? And this, of course, is a well-renowned show. Remembered as one of the best dirty pay-per-views of all time. And I was curious to see if that would hold up based on this system. Because, you know, obviously we've talked about the inspiration for this show being the year that was with Aaron George. He's done projects before. We've done some of our no-holds-barred rankings before. When you start putting in these types of mathematical formulas that are driven by just kind of our own decisions, right? Like, it can affect shows in ways you think it wouldn't, right? So when you start breaking down these categories, maybe it gets hurt or helped by certain things, you know, affecting the weighting of it. So I was interested to see, would this be a show that is helped or hurt, or just what we expected with the system?
Yeah, absolutely. And let's get into it. In a dark match, we've got Santino Marella and Vladimir Kozlov defeating the new nexus of David Otunga and Michael McGillicuddy.
The kings of the dark matches, Vladimir Kozlov and Santino Marella.
Hot act. But starting the show for the SmackDown Money in the Bank ladder match for the World Heavyweight Championship contract, Daniel Bryan is going to defeat Cody Rhodes, Heath Slater, Justin Gabriel, Kane, Sin Cara, Sheamus, and Wade Barrett. Man, we got a really good one here. I went 4.25 on it.
Yeah, I went 4.5. I love this match. It's a great moment because of the main event. I feel like the rest of this card often gets overlooked. Like, I think everyone remembers it being a great show, but I feel like it often is forgotten, just how good some of the other stuff on here is. And this Money in the Bank is a great match. It's an awesome way to start the show of what's going to be a great night. And it's Daniel Bryan's big moment, like his first big moment in the WWE, which counts for a lot for me. It's the first big win he gets, wins the Money in the Bank contract. You wonder where it'll go from here. Will he fall victim to just being another guy that loses it? They haven't been many of those, but you can see it happening with him for sure at this point. But it was a really good match. It was hard-hitting. We get the big bump by Sin Cara where the ladder gets smashed in half, and Bryan ends up just kicking Barrett in the head to win the briefcase. So I thought this was an awesome show. Awesome way to kick off the show. And it's a memorable match for me, too, because pre-WWE Network, there's only a couple of pay-per-views actually ordered, but I'd also obviously DVR them, right? So this was one I ordered because it was going to be a big deal. And it was on my DVR box for a while. So it was one I'd often watch, like, to pass out at night when you didn't just have a ton of streaming options at your fingertips. So I've seen this Money in the Bank match a lot because I throw it on, it lasts like 20 minutes and pass out. So I know it well, and I've always loved it, and I think it's one of my favorite Money in the Bank matches of all time.
Yeah, and it really, like, kicked off the night because there is, like, something special in the air, and they're in a special arena in a special city. And you look at this match and look at the players at the time as we track this season. We've seen Cody Rhodes, and it seems like the natural progression for him is going to be Money in the Bank. And we've got Wade Barrett, and a natural progression for him seems like Money in the Bank. And then you've got a guy like Sheamus in there. Mm-hmm. And you can never count him out. And even to an extent, you've got Kane. You can never count Kane out. So you got like four winners there. But Daniel Bryan's the one that wins it. And like that's kind of the people's choice. And this is during a time where people don't always get what they want. And things are a little bit more paint by numbers. So we were expecting Cody Rhodes or Wade Barrett or Sheamus. But we got Bryan here. And this was like, oh boy. There might be something special brewing tonight. And again, the match was an absolute banger, all-time classic for us.
Yeah, I think it's a retrospect look back when you say, yes, that should have been a big sign that they were going to kind of go with what the people want on this night between this and the main event. Like, it was a harbinger of what was to come for sure. Like, they cashed in on both ends. So it was exciting.
Yeah. Speaking of excitement for the Divas Championship, we've got Kelly Kelly and Brie Bella. I should say Kelly Kelly is with Eve Torres. Brie Bella is with her sister Nikki. Kelly Kelly is the champion going into this matchup, and Kelly Kelly is going to retain. I went 1 3/4.
Yeah, same for me. I mean, it's fine. The problem is, like, they're trying real hard with Kelly, and she's improved. Like, she's trying hard too. She's been here 4 years now. 5 years. I think she debuted in what, 06 on ECW. So, like, she's a veteran by this point. But when she's the one that's going to carry the match, no bueno, right? Like, she can be carried by some of the better workers, but this is a tough spot for her. Brie Bella, like we teased earlier, not really ready, quite ready for prime time yet. This felt like an awkward match to have on the show. Like, they really could have stuck in a real good worker probably here with Kelly and made this pop even more, as is. It's kind of a drag on the night. So yeah, 1 3/4, and just a tough spot for these two.
Yeah, they did them no favors. You got two women who are best served following as opposed to leading a match at this point. And I mean, it's just too much to ask. And it shows. Like, they don't do a bad job at all. It's just they were put in a no-win situation. Our next match of the evening, coming off of the hot angle the previous month, we've got The Big Show and Mark Henry. Mark Henry is going to defeat The Big Show. I went 3 stars on this monster mash.
I went 2 3/4. It's a very good match. It's a very good storyline, too. Like, and they really, you can tell, you know, in addition to Daniel Bryan and others, they're also trying to get Mark Henry's push jump started here, too. So this is a big moment. Not only did he put Big Show through a table the month before, but here he beats him clean with two big running splashes, as well as the World's Strongest Slam. And then he puts the chair on Big Show's ankle after the match and pilmanizes him and takes Big Show out. So it makes him look like a killer. It's a big, clean win over a well-regarded former world champion in Big Show. This is a really good match and way to keep Mark Henry's Superman push, or at least ramping up and continuing on. So, yeah, and this is a very good match. You would think on paper this might be a tough one, but it delivered.
Yeah, they definitely deliver. Up next, for the Raw Money in the Bank ladder match for the WWE Championship contract. Make sure I get all that WWE verbiage in. We've got Alberto Del Rio winning the briefcase in a match that also had Kofi Kingston, Jack Swagger, Evan Bourne, R-Truth, Alex Riley, The Miz, and Rey Mysterio. I went 3.5 on this matchup.
I went 4. Again, it's another Money in the Bank match I really like. I feel like they're loaded. Usually you don't get two great ones. I feel like on these shows, you usually get one that kind of lags behind. Now, again, I had this behind the other match, but still really, really good. I thought Evan Bourne really stood out. I thought he looked great. Mysterio's always good in these matches. And I thought having Del Rio kind of recapture, you know, take the briefcase and get back on track toward a world title opportunity, championship opportunity, made a lot of sense, given the way he's kind of been jerked around. Now he's pulled pretty much out of the SmackDown world title picture with all the Orton Christian stuff going on. He's kind of gotten hosed in all this. So this is a really good way to heat him back up, put him on Raw, and let him get in the mix over there. So the only thing is, I didn't think we needed another injury, like with Miz. Like, we kind of already did that with Sin Cara earlier. But they do it again here, so fine, whatever. But he did come back and almost win, so I guess it paid off a little bit better. But this was another great Money in the Bank, and I thought the momentum kept rolling through the show with this one.
Yeah, Del Rio's kind of been hosed all year. But going into this, he's pegged as the winner. Even though everybody did a really good job in the matchup, they had a little through line there with Miz. But yeah, it's good to see them get back on track with Del Rio, because he's really been a good player for them since he debuted. And they got off track, you know, in the previous season with WrestleMania, and Christian needing to get his nice moment in there. So, like, Del Rio has been pushed to the back burner, and just this character is so good at the time. This is really somebody who needs to be progressing towards becoming WWE champion or world heavyweight champion. You really can't have him be busy and distract him with other storylines. He's, I think, is a character very centralized around being the champion.
Agreed. This is a great showcase for him to get back going. It's not just when it's a battle royal or a No More Contender match or something. Like, he's winning a Money in the Bank match against some pretty good competition on a big spot. And I like the guys involved in this too. You know, we're continuing Truth's big push. We are by having this match. You know, Miz is kind of back in the mix. You know, we talked to Alex Riley earlier. He's back in the mix here too, by being part of you know, a big match like this. So his win at least wasn't forgotten that quickly. Kofi's always fun in here. Mysterio's evergreen. So it's a good mix of talent. And it feels like it's an up-and-comers Money in the Bank match, which is kind of what it should be. And it felt that way on SmackDown, too, for this one. Like, sometimes you get the Money in the Bank with the veterans, right, where it's Cena and Orton and Kane and guys like that, which is fine. But I like the Money in the Banks when it's more of a up-and-comer who's going to break through and become the next big star type of match. Because a lot of times with the Royal Rumble, you get all the big names. So this to me should be like exclusive to guys that are trying to earn that shot that may not get it otherwise. And I thought we got that both tonight.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. The Royal Rumble is this match where, oh, anybody can win, but really it comes down to like 3 or 4 names every year. And they're usually like your main eventers. You know, your mid-carders, upper mid-carders have no shot of winning that. But this Money in the Bank, it kind of filled that gap of, okay, this is going to be for an upper mid-carder guy who needs a little something to get up to the world title scene. So yeah, I think Money in the Bank is much better when it serves that purpose.
Yeah, and I feel like they're missing that aspect on their programming for most of the promotion's lifespan of having that, like, breakthrough opportunity. They kind of did it a little bit with some NXT stuff, and you know, Ring of Honor used to do it well with the Young Prospect Tournament, whatever that was called. Like, they should do more of this with guys that, you know, working their way up the card, get into a tournament or some sort of format to earn a big match. Like, they don't do it enough.
Yeah, especially with Money in the Bank. Like, you have a full calendar year, you know, and if your booking is not good enough to get somebody over in a year to, you know, at least pop a rating for a Raw or a pay-per-view or whatever, a good moment where they cash in, like, all right, worst case scenario, they lose. Like, I don't know. It's foolproof. And I wish they took more chances with, you know, raising up the upper mid-carders or even mid-card guys to the main event picture.
Yeah, like, I don't want to harp on it either. Like, they have so many hours of TV to do cool stuff like this. I just don't know why they don't do it. It's like, they're just, like, petrified to do shit like this. Like, why not say, yeah, we're going to spend the next month of TV with all these like up and comers building toward the winner gets a big title match on this special Raw. Like, why not do something like that?
Yeah. Well, we'll move on to the World Heavyweight Championship match as we've got Christian winning the World Heavyweight Championship by disqualification. The special stipulation was that if Randy Orton was disqualified or if there was a poor officiating choice, then Orton would lose the title. So Christian is going to get the title by disqualification. I absolutely love this match. I went a full 5 stars on it.
So I liked it a lot, and I went 4.25, which gives it all-time match status. So I liked it on par with the last show. And I think at first I didn't like it because I didn't like the whole Christian trying to just bait Orton into getting DQ'd instead of trying to win. But then it grew on me because it gets like really intense. So I think that early portion hurt it for me because, and maybe that's a me thing and not a them thing, but it felt like hokey. Like, it's similar to what we talked about with Bret Hart and Owen Hart at SummerSlam 94, right? With them just constantly just trying to escape the cage instead of beat each other or win the match. It felt kind of, or I should say, like, you know what I'm saying? I shouldn't say win the match, but like just trying to run away instead of
fight. Right.
This felt similar to that. Like, instead of Christian trying to actually win, he's immediately just going to like this pussy tactics. But then I'm like, well, he has been screwed a couple times. Like, he's trying to make the rules work for him. And this has been a pretty intense story. And it's kind of okay if Christian wins this way, even though it's maybe not the strongest win. You know, just kick him in the nuts and Christian wins the title. But it does get really good toward the end, where now you start to buy into all these teases. And the post-match is good, too, with the RKO on the table. So I liked it a lot. I think it's a great match. Obviously, it's going to get all-time match points for us. But I don't think we're there yet for me to that, where they'll hit the top level.
Yeah, I absolutely love the little wrinkle here of the title changing by disqualification and it actually happening, because that's like a stipulation they add and like nothing ever comes of it. And also, like, I feel like the character never really fits that stipulation, but this was a perfect use here. Like, Christian has slipped back into that creepy little bastard character, right, and he is just trying anything to become champion again. You know, the one more match stuff and you know, having his foot underneath the rope the previous month. And it's getting to the point where, like, okay, now he knows he can't beat Randy Orton cleanly. He needs a little something extra. Uh-huh. And I just thought it was perfectly done. And again, they took a chance. Like, they took a chance actually changing the title in the storyline with a stipulation that was added. You know, they beat Randy Orton, which is something that they don't always do. He's kind of one of those more protected characters who they like to have always come out on top. But Christian wins a title here, and we get some more storytelling, and we're not done yet with these guys. And I loved all the post-match stuff, too. The crowd went absolutely nuts for it.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, a bonus point for them to do something, try something different, be different. And this is a good card to do it, because we already had two Money in the Banks, and we have a massive main event. So if you're going to do something kind of weird, like, this is the show to do it on, where you have plenty of coverage if it goes awry.
Yeah. And let's get to that massive main event. It's one we know very well. We've got John Cena is going to lose the WWE Championship to CM Punk in CM Punk's hometown of Chicago. The kiss is going to be blown to Vince. And, of course, I went 5 stars on it. All-time classic.
Yeah, me too. It's one of the best matches in company history. I think I had it. I think it's top five on my GWWE list. I mean, it's an all-timer. It holds up. The crowd is sucked into it. It's not only a great storyline, but the in-ring is excellent, too. Like, they deliver across the board. The build, obviously, was all-timer. It's a classic at PTB lore as well, where this is, like, you know, 5 months into the podcast history, and Scott goes on the cruise. He misses the pipe bomb. This is the show. Like, it's iconic across the board for everything it entails. And for, you know, with Punk's contract coming up and you're unsure what's going to happen going into the show, like, you could see it just using him. He went over Ray last month just so he could put over Cena here. And then all of a sudden he does the pipe bomb promo. He catches fire. There was so much chatter going around. Like, is he going to leave with the title? Just so much good stuff. And it, you know, obviously was mirroring his Summer of Punk in ROH. If you're kind of inside the know, if you're an ROH guy or girl and you were a fan of it, so you kind of knew what was coming, perhaps, if he won. So there's like a lot at play here going on. If I had to nitpick a little bit, it's the Johnny Ace shit with Cena breaking the hold and all that. Mm-hmm. But fine, whatever. There's so much other perfection here that I'm not going to ding it. So it's a perfect match, one of the greatest of all time. And it makes Punk a superstar in WWE, which shouldn't be overlooked as well. To this point, he was a star. He was well, you know, as much as he was bitching and everyone else was bitching, he was still really well used. He had been world champion a couple times. He had been Money in the Bank holder a couple times. Like, he was a main eventer. But this takes him from main eventer to, like, all-time great. And in one night, a legend. And the crowd was insane.
Yeah, this took him from being a guy to, like, being the guy right up there with Cena. And for me, one thing I've been curious about as we do this project, we know there's kind of like a sliding scale of like, okay, maybe a match from 1994 that's three stars wouldn't crack three stars in, you know, 2015 or 2016. Like, somewhere in there, the athleticism, the storytelling, the expectations of a match changes and the bar raises. And I think as far as the WWE main event style, this is the match that really starts that. Where we get, like, we have a higher expectation for what a classic looks like and what a five-star match looks like, and with the excitement and the moments in the match, but also, like, just the structure of the match. This is the first time really we're seeing, like, John Cena's moves of doom, like, violated. And you know, we expect to see the five knuckle shuffle and, you know, it gets countered, or we expect to see the FU here and it gets countered, and, like, all these little different wrinkles that they do and they go back to, and then, you know, they deliver on this move that they teased a couple minutes ago, and then they're trying to get to another move and they go like two steps back countering, and then eventually they get to the move that they just tried a few minutes ago. And it's like that the whole time, and it's a formula they're going to keep as they continue to fight on pay-per-view and also through the TV matches in the next 2 years, which unfortunately we won't see. But that is something I remember, is like, you can pinpoint to this matchup, and it's kind of a little bit of like that ROH style bleeding through with like Kevin Owens and El Generico and other guys that were really doing that style in the ROH and independent scene that has now bled up to the main roster into WWE. And like, this is the match where it starts.
Yeah. I think the closest comp in WWE to this would be One Night Stand 06 with Cena RVD, where the crowd is like, all pro RVD, super into the match, the heat's insane. And I think that's mirrored here just on a bigger scale. And obviously Punk is much more of a future of the company type of guy than RVD was in 06. So, yeah, I mean, it's an all-timer, and it caps off what obviously we're looking at to be an all-time show. And Marcus, when you look at our total plus minus war for the match grades alone, it's by far our highest score. It's 7.75. Total score for match grade, which tops Capital Punishment, which is our previous high at 3.75. So it is 4 points better than our previous total match grade scoring.
Yeah, and maybe this is like the signs being cheated a little bit, but we've only got a 6-match card. Two of those matches are world title matches. Another two of those matches are Money in the Bank matches. So there's not a lot of room for error. But at the same time, when you only have 6 matches, like, Your bigger matches all need to deliver. And,
They did. All four did.
Yeah.
And really, I mean, outside of the women's match, everything hit. Like, Show and Henry was really good as well. So the two title matches, the two Money in the Banks, which isn't always a gimme either, that both of those are going to be, you know, that good, right? Like, sometimes they're very good, but maybe not that good. But you put those and you pile them on top of the title matches, like, everything hit. And it, again, yes, we had a bad match in the women's match, but everything was so good that it just completely eradicated it.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to our plus minus category. So for build, we had the pipe bomb, obviously, is an all-timer. We had the heavy emphasis leading on Chicago being the city for this match, which plays a major role. You stick this in Corpus Christi, we might not get the reaction we got in Chicago, right? So that's an all-time part of this. Orton Christian's build continues to be sterling, and the Mark Henry push played a big role in his match at Big Show.
Yeah, and just to piggyback on the build, this is now 2 pay-per-views in a row where we're seeing WWE emphasize where the location of the pay-per-view is. Whereas with Capital Punishment, it was just like, okay, Washington, D.C. was a star. Well, now Chicago is a star, but also the star of the main event is from Chicago. And that plays a huge factor in into the vibe of the show. And as far as minuses, we didn't have any here. Everything was at replacement level or above.
Yep. So 4 points total. All right, commentary, which you could argue may be the only weak spot on this show. We have Michael Cole calling Del Rio's win, which was really good in the Money in the Bank. And also Cole invoking Montreal in Survivor Series 97 is a hint of what could possibly be coming here later tonight during Cena and Punk. So 2 points for the pluses. What do you got for the minuses?
We got Cole and King being buddies, and we've seen them a few throughout the year, and it's not really necessarily resolved. But yeah, just inconsistent dynamics between those two.
I really have hated that throughout this whole year. Like, that was as close to a blood feud as we've had at 11. And all of a sudden they're like yucking it up. Like, why? Like, we never even got Cole on maybe, I mean, there's so much TV, who the fuck knows, but I don't think he did. Like, give us a reconciliation moment. Like, even if you're going to have Cole still be kind of a heel, say, you know what, King, I got carried away. You're a legend. I tried to make a name at your expense. I'm sorry. Like, let's just forget it, move on. And King say, yeah, whatever. I got my revenge. I'm fine. Like, and then just at least give us some reason why they're buddy-buddy and yucking it up.
Right. And, like, for each show, you have to assume, like, it's somebody's first time watching ever. Like, somebody's first time watching in a long time. So, like, if, you know, you're part of the bar crowd or, you know, you're a college kid or whatever, and you're only checking in on the pay-per-views and you don't see all the week-to-week TV, like, okay, these guys were feuding last time I watched. Why are they okay now? Like, there's no explanation. And, you know, I couldn't give you one, and like, I watched all the TV. I have no idea what to tell somebody there. But as far as another minus, we've got Cole saying that Punk had some kind of mind control over the crowd. And like, we just mentioned, Chicago was like a star, an important part of the show going in. And Punk is like notorious dude from Chicago. And like, that's a big part of his character. And he is an equal part of the main event with John Cena. Like, he is helping carry this whole thing. So, like, does he really have mind control over that? Or, like, are they just rooting for their hometown dude? I think the explanation is just that simple. You don't have to get into, like, mind control and stuff like that.
It was a really weird direction to take it. Like, it didn't make a lot of sense to me at all. And it was one of the few negatives on that match. Like, just admit it. He's super over. He's in Chicago. It's not a new thing for Cena to get booed. Like, that's obvious. Like, he's been booed for 5 years at this point. Like, everyone knows the crowds are against him usually. So why are we playing like Punk is like fucking Papa Shango or something, you know, manipulating the crowd into cheering for him? And like, were they trying to make it like a Raven type thing where he has like mind control effects over other people? Like, it was just, I don't know. Maybe they were going there at first and then they back off. I have no clue. It was just a really weird direction to go. And doesn't stand.
Are they trying to say like, oh, the crowd's dumb, the crowd's stupid? Like,
no, I think they're trying to make it like he's, I don't know, like, maybe they're trying to play up the cult stuff, the cult of personality, the cult leader. He led the Nexus and like all that. So that's the only thing I could think of, is that they were trying to play up that like he's like cult like in his leadership, which they have done, but just it felt like really weird here.
Yeah, they're just like overthinking it. Like, the explanation is just that simple. Like, he is Chicago dude. He is the representative of Chicago. The show is in Chicago. Chicago loves its own. It's that simple.
Cena.
Yeah.
It's obvious. All right, atmosphere. Mysterio getting booed was interesting, but we give it a point for that. The huge pop for The Miz, so good on him. He's bounced back from the A-Rai loss. Red hot for Orton Christian, and of course, molten all-timer for Punk and Cena.
Must be that mind control that CM Punk has over the crowd to Rey Mysterio from their feud earlier in the season. Again, another category where we didn't have any minuses, though.
No, we did not. So 4 points for that. And, of course, it was a wash for commentary. All right, notable moments and importance. Lots going on here. You got Daniel Bryan winning the Money in the Bank. You got Mark Henry's super push continuing. We got the awesome finish to Money in the Bank with Del Rio taking off Rey's mask with the ladders collapsing and him winning. Christian's mind games paying off, winning and paying off the storyline. The Orton post-match where he destroys Christian. And then, of course, Punk's win is the all-time great notable moment.
Yeah, and as far as minuses go, we have Brie Bella not ready to be in this position. And I guess to an extent, Kelly as well, right, for like carrying a match as champion.
Yeah, we needed just someone more seasoned to be in that match. But a lot here, 6 points for notable importance and moments, which is, I think, something you definitely would have thought coming in. I mean, this is a super memorable show. Lots of big stuff going on.
Yeah.
All right, so that's 7 3/4 for the match grades, like we talked about. Card structure, just an absolute perfect main event. in place for this, and no negatives.
Yeah, no negatives. Great flow throughout the whole show.
Rewatchability, Cena, Punk, Orton, Christian, and the SmackDown main event.
Yeah, I mean, that's half of the show is worth, you know, putting the show on just for that itself.
And all three of those are also all-time matches. So there's 3 points for each of those categories. That may be, I'm curious, like, how many of the shows have three all-time matches on it for us? 3, 4.25 or higher. They can't be many.
Yeah. I think the show's going to lead the pack when it comes to that. Like, that's really hard to think of, like, a WWE pay-per-view with three matches above four and a quarter.
It's going to have to be, like, a modern show.
Right, probably, maybe.
Where the work rate jumps up, or maybe some of the NXT stuff or something like that. That's all I can think
of. Yeah, I'm having a hard time thinking of a show that stands out like that.
All right, so that gives us a total war of 28.75. Which just demolishes everything before it. The high before this was Capital Punishment at 13.75. So it just destroys the field. And I think the big question, Marcus, to me is going to be, is this the new realistic ceiling? Or is this going to be a super outlier where only a few rarefied cards come close to? Like, are we talking like this is the tip-top sky for all of these shows? Like, you may get 3 or 4 other ones in that realm, and the real ceiling for most shows may be more in that like 20-ish range. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I guess time's gonna tell, but like, this is an all-time show, and we knew that going into it, and we just kind of like broke down, okay, why isn't it an all-time show outside of the matches? And like, you know, everything else just adds to it, like we just said, and a lot of those categories didn't have any minuses or didn't have any takeaways. So, like, I mean, it's as close to a flawless show as, you know, I think they've ever done. And definitely as far as we've seen, like, we knew it was an all-time show. And I think this is just the science establishing that. And we'll see, you know, what can touch it, if anything. You know, like, how does Canadian Stampede stack up? How does, you know, WrestleMania 17 and 19, how do those compare? So, yeah, you know, we'll see. But I think that, you know, we might get a couple shows that sneak in the high teens, maybe in the high 20s, but I don't think we'll get anything that touches this. And that's my bold take. I think that this is gonna be our number one show overall.
Well, I mean, because it clicks at a few levels. Not only does it have the in-ring, it has the moments, which you need that combo. Like, it's got three things. It's got the all-time matches, the all-time moments, and no real negatives. Like it's gonna be tough to match that, because even Kelly Bree is under 5 minutes of this show. So we didn't ding, so we only put it like on a couple of the lines. Like, we didn't overly ding it, right? So yeah, it's gonna be tough. It's gonna be tough to top it. We might have peaked very early here by picking the season, but it's an interesting one for sure, and we'll track it. It's almost good, I think, to have that benchmark out of the gate though.
Yeah, now we know what, you know, an all-time show looks like, and right. You know, it's hovering, you know, just a couple points below 30.
Yeah, so we'll see. Is this the high, the ultimate high? And I'm curious not only if anything beats it, but what else enters its stratosphere? Like, what is going to be that rarefied air? Is it going to be 25? Is it going to be 28? Like, what is going to be like, oh shit, like the best shows notch at least like a 25 score for us?
Yeah, that might be the benchmark that we're looking at for, you know, that separates the very good from all-time great.
So, all right, man. That was a lot of fun. So, I don't think, you know, we don't have to re-rack everything, but those are our two net top shows now, the ones we covered tonight. Money in the Bank 11 is our number one show. Capital Punishment 11 is our second best show. And then the rest kind of fall into line from there. So we'll be back in 2 weeks, Marcus. We're going to cover the next two shows, which will be another big one, though, with SummerSlam 2011. So, you know, one that is really well regarded as another big classic show. We'll see how it compares to Money in the Bank. And then Night of Champions 11 as well, we'll touch on.
I'm looking forward to it, and we'll see if SummerSlam can enter that 25-plus category.
For sure, and maybe we'll reset the ceiling just below the all-times as well. So remember to continue to live your life above replacement level. This is WWE War. JT, Marcus, we're out. Talk to you.
I gotta get paid.
Well, that's the way it is.
Come on.
That's just the way it is. Things will never be the same. That's just the way it is. Oh yeah.
change. It's time for us as a people to start making some changes. Let's change the way we eat, let's change the way we live, and let's change the way we treat each other. You see, the old way wasn't working, so it's on us to do what we gotta do to survive. And still I see no changes. Can a brother get a little peace? It's war on the streets and a war in the Middle East. Instead of war on poverty, they got a war on drugs so the police can bother me. And I ain't never did a crime I ain't have to do. But now I'm back with the facts, giving it back to you. Don't let them jack you up, back you up, crack you up, and pips smack you up. You gotta learn to hold your own. They get jealous when they see you with your mobile phone. But tell the cops I can't touch this. I don't trust this. When they try to rush, I bust this. That's the sound number two. You say it ain't cool. But it rains no fool. And as long as I stay black, I got a stage strap. And I never get to lay back, cause I always gotta worry about the payback. Some buck that I roughed up way back, coming back after all these years. Right, tat, 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 tat.
That's the way it is.
That's just the way it is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Things will never be the same. That's just the way it is. That's just the way it is. Things will never be the same. That's just the way it is. Oh yeah.
Something will never change.